compared to those periods when excluding the effect of the FX movements on Central America. Broken down by geography, Colombia accounted for 61% of total gross fees. Domestic fees grew by 9.3% compared to the same quarter 12 months earlier, while Central American fees grew at 11% in dollar terms and 8.2% increase in Colombian peso terms over the same period. The bottom of the page represents other income. Other income for the quarter was 493 billion Colombian pesos. This result was affected by a lower contribution of the non-financial sector, non-consolidated equity investments, and other income when compared to the previous quarters included on this chart. The lower result of the non-financial sector was mainly due to a lower contribution of our infrastructure sector. In particular, the delay in the initiation and ramp-up of our new toll road concessions has delayed income that should have replaced the phasing out of older concessions such as Coviantes. In addition, the rest of our portfolio, which includes hotels, agro-industry, has been negatively affected by the slow economic cycle. Lower income from the non-consolidated equity investment reflects the seasonality of dividends received, in particular, the $32 billion dividend from Empresa Energía de Bogotá received during the first quarter. Finally, other operating income for the second quarter of 2016 was particularly high, given a strong performance in FX. In addition, that quarter included tax returns. returns of 60 billion pesos, Ruta del Sol for 30 billion pesos, and other income. Moving to page 19, we present some efficiency ratios. Our efficiency ratio measured as operating expenses to total income of 46.9% during the quarter improved from 47.2% recorded 12 months earlier and deteriorated from 45.9% recorded during the previous quarter. Improvement compared to a year ago or to the previous year results from a better performance of our Central American operation on this front. In Central America, this ratio improved to 51.8% during the quarter, down from 54.8% a year earlier, and ended at 53.4% during the first quarter of 2017. In Colombia, this ratio deteriorated to 44.5% during this quarter, up from 43.5% a year earlier, and 42.4% during the first quarter of 2017. Our efficiency measured as operating expense to average assets of 3.5% remained unchanged compared to the second quarter 2016 and increased from 3.4% in the first quarter of 2017. Central America reported 4.4% during this quarter, improving 35 basis points from 4.8% recorded during the second quarter of 2016 and remained substantially at the same level as the previous quarter. Colombia reported 3.1% during this quarter, up from 2.9% for both the first quarter of 2017 and the same quarter of 2016. We expect 2017 efficiency measured on a cost-to-income base to be similar to 2016's. This result builds on compensating for headwinds for salary adjustments covered by union agreements that were well in excess of inflation. Finally, on page 20, we present our net income and profitability ratios. Actual net income for the quarter was 471 billion pesos or 21 pesos per share. Return on average assets and return on average equity for the quarter were 1.3% and 12.4% respectively. Before moving to Q&A, I will now summarize our general guidance for 2017. We expect loan growth to be in the 8% area during 2017. The income is expected to grow at a slightly faster pace than loan volume. We expect 2017 cost of risk net of recoveries to be in the 2.4 to 2.5% area. We expect full year 2017 net interest margin to be slightly higher than that for 2016. Regarding efficiency ratio, we expect them to be similar to 2016's. We expect 2017 marginal tax rate to be in the 34% area. Finally, we expect our 2017 ROE to be in the 12.5 to 13% area. This incorporates the higher expectation of cost of risk than previously anticipated. I will now open it to questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. And our first question comes from Nicolas Riva from Citi.
Yeah, thanks, Luis Carlos and Diego for taking my questions. Two questions from me, and the first one is more general on the economy. We know that economic growth has been disappointing this year, and I wanted you to discuss a bit more, you know, the expectations for economic growth for 2018, and really what should be the drivers of the expected pickup in economic growth, if it's basically lower interest rates, if it's, you know, lower corporate income taxes, driving more investments, and what should be the drivers for the pickup in economic growth next year. And then the second question on margins, which I think was one of the positive highlights this quarter. I was positively surprised by what happened there. We saw an expansion of 20 basis points quarter on quarter, 50 basis points year on year. Given that interest rates have been decreasing this year in Colombia, what really explained the wider net interest margins in the second quarter, if it was more on a less competitive scenario from the other banks, and what's the outlook for margins for next year? Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks for your question, Nicolas. And let me address the first question about economic growth. We are expecting, as I said, that the last two quarters of this year will grow much better than the first two quarters, and that those last two quarters will keep their momentum into next year, into 2018. Consequently, I think next year we should see growth of closer to 2.25%, 2.3%, and maybe as high as 2.4%. The drivers for that, on the one hand, I do insist that all these infrastructure doldrums will be dealt with before the end of this year. I see all the Colombian financial system, at least the larger banks, waiting to get involved again in 4G infrastructure, but obviously holding out until the government solves this problem that we're having with the ANI and their reluctance to honor the agreement that they have signed with us with respect to getting paid not only the first payment to the banking system, which I believe that's going to happen fairly soon, but the remaining payments to get the banks fully paid. And logically, I think the rest of the banking system is waiting to see what happens with that. And I think 4G will have a big impact. I also think that as the lower rates permeate the economy, we'll see better consumer demand, and we'll see better quality on the consumer loan portfolio. And I also finally think that once we start getting the full effect of the 2016 fiscal reform on corporate tax rates and the doing away with the equity tax, I think that we'll see corporations coming back to the game and putting through their expansion plans and obtaining financing to do so. So it'll come from various fronts. And to summarize, 4G, better consumer demand, and better corporate profitability. So, you know, having said all that, I think, as I said, 2018 should be a better year. We will have, obviously, as we move on in these last two quarters of 2017, we'll have a much, much better indication of what happens next year. And, you know, and just to finalize, we now have about 40 political candidates wanting to be president, and I think that will filter pretty soon as coalitions start to become clearer. And when that happens, I think that also tends to take away some of the anxiety of the economy. And when you put all that together, again to finalize, we should have a better 2018.
Yeah. Nicolas, and moving to your second question on margins, perhaps what we're seeing here is a result of diversification. We are indeed seeing interest rates on loans falling, particularly on corporate loans. They have fallen around 40 basis points when you compare quarter on quarter. There is some repricing still to happen, given that there is a lag of around a couple months between the central bank adjusting rates and us being able to, or rather than us, our floating rates to reprice. On the other hand, the funding side also has a lag, slightly shorter than the lag that we have seen on the corporate loans. The other hand, the Central American prices have been slightly going up. That has helped. And in Colombia, on the consumer front, something that appears to be happening is pricing has started to better incorporate the deterioration of the consumer portfolio that we've seen. You might have, if you've been following the news in Colombia, there's been a lot of pressure from the government asking the banks to adjust rates down. That is actually happening on the corporate level, but on the consumer side, given that the cost of risk has gone up, there's less room for that to happen. The way that translates into prices is there is not a very aggressive competition between the banks to beat down the prices and to steal clients away. That is actually the mechanics how a lot of that pricing happens. The explanation for that is it seems that most of the banks in the system are seeing something similar to what we have seen, regardless if that has already shown up in their numbers. Moving into next year, that I believe that was the end of your question, what we expect to see is, depends very much on what happens with inflation and what happens with the central bank. On that front, what we believe should be happening is there is little room for additional reductions during this year. There could be another quarter, let's say, but nothing as substantial as what has happened before. For next year, it very much depends on the success on getting inflation in shape. We believe that's going to happen, perhaps not as rosy as some of the analysts are pointing out to. We believe in more of an inflation in the 3.5% area. That would imply a central bank rate somewhere around 4.5% by year end. Accompanying that, there should be some additional adjustment in margins. If you are to compare full year 2018 to full year 2017, you have to bear in mind that we have had a particularly strong first half. That implies that next year compared to this year could have, this is very early to tell, but it could be somewhere around a 20 basis points difference with what happens this year. And this is a very preliminary estimate and depends very much on what we see by the end of the year.
Our next question comes from Frederic Demaris from UBS.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Luis Carlos, Diego, and team for the opportunity. I have actually a follow-up on the previous questions on the growth in Colombia. You mentioned that there was a bit of a concern on the consumer side. Obviously, that might be related to the VAT. However, we saw that most of the growth, or the higher part of the growth in Colombia, came from credit cards and consumer lending. So I wanted to get your thoughts in terms of what kind of deceleration you would be expecting in consumer lending. Are you concerned with that portfolio? Are you changing anything to control the NPLs? And also on this question about the growth, the potential growth in Colombia, if the slow economy continues for another few quarters, are you concerned that maybe the tax cuts that were announced a few months ago could be revised, or maybe we could have another fiscal reform down the road? So that's for Colombia. And then just a final, a second question or a second set of questions on Central America. Could you just quickly comment in terms of trends that you're expecting for the next few quarters, especially what kind of ROEs would you be expecting in the sub-region? Thank you very much.
All right, let me try to answer your first question, and then Diego can help me out if I leave anything out. Consumer grew more in relative terms, but in absolute terms, it really didn't grow all that much. But in terms of what concerns us and on and what could happen. Yeah, I think the first quarter we saw an effect from the increase in value-added taxes, and I think that that affected more consumer confidence than consumer ability to repay their loans. I think that that has been put in the back of their minds, but I do see, as I said, unemployment, especially urban unemployment, going up. When you look at the country's total unemployment rate, they don't look alarming, but if you look specifically at urban unemployment, and let's be honest, most consumer lending happens in cities, not in the rural areas as much. So obviously that is of concern to me. The other thing that on the contrary works well for this is that, as Diego was saying, the central bank decrease in rate has not been transferred that much to the consumer loan portfolio rates. And when you combine a bit of a higher unemployment or not a bit higher unemployment with high consumer rates, then obviously that doesn't bode very well for the health of your portfolios. I think that as we move on, we'll start to see relief on the consumer side because of that. What else was it?
Change in strategy and the effect of the slow economy eventually on taxes.
Okay. In strategy, and that's our strategy, Centenario strategy. What we have done is we are paying, well, first thing that we always do, it takes a little bit of time to gear up, but the one thing that we're doing is we're strengthening collections, and we're doing a group-wide revision of our collection policies. As always, we tend to look at of all our banks, of the four commercial banks here and the banking group in Central America, we tend to look who's doing better under the distressed or stressed at least economic environment, and we try to emulate that in the rest of our banks. I think that we're starting to see some good consequences of that, and I expect to see more. We're also, as part of this digitalization strategy, that it's important to us that we've been working with consultants for the last few months, and that we finally put together an executable digital strategy that has started to be executed by Banco de Bogotá and BAC, and we'll keep going with the other banks. As part of that digital strategy, we're streamlining and our processes around collections, and that should help. And we're also streamlining some of the credit granting processes, and that should help. So we're trying to do better what we always do, and we're paying a lot of attention. We're totally at a high level of discomfort with the current rates of cost of risk. But when we reach traditionally these high levels of discomfort, we tend to do things to get things in line, and we hope this won't be the exception. With regards to the tax reform, I wish I could say that there is no doubt in my mind that the 2016 tax reform will be implemented in full and that we'll be a happy family after that happens. But then again, historical evidence in Colombia points to the contrary. We, I think, have had a tax reform every 2 years for the last 50 years or so. So it's hard to say whether the new president that is elected by 2018. It'll be hard for a new president to run on a new tax reform, that's for sure. So we'll probably have all the candidates saying that there won't be a new tax reform, but, you know, we've heard that before as well. Your point is very valid. The hole in fiscal revenues that will be created by a lower corporate tax rate and by doing away the equity tax has to be compensated with something. I think that the good news is that with these lower rates, and with a stable dollar and with a stable oil price and with the current account and the trade balance deficit sort of getting aligned and getting better, we might get better corporate results because we might get the commercial side of the economy, the business side of the economy going again. And if that happens, well, then they should produce better income before taxes, and at any tax rate, will have better results and better tax collections. I have said in the past, and by the way, so to finish that, then if we have better income before taxes, with the new tax rates, we might compensate for the whole. But that's yet to be seen. We'll see how the economy keeps going in the next few quarters. One thing that I have said, I said probably in New York 2 or 3 months ago, and I still believe in that, is that we're going to have to sit down and take a hard look at the fiscal rule under which we live, which is a self-imposed constraint that I honestly don't think makes a lot of sense. I think that at some point, we're going to have to revise what is our comfort level in terms of a fiscal deficit. And I don't see a reason to self-impose that we have to bring it down to 1%. And that would give the country an ability to borrow. And this country is very, very credit worthy. And if we can borrow, then we can compensate the hole. And if we compensate the hole, we can live with the 2016 fiscal reform. I don't know if my words just fall on deaf ears, but I'll keep insisting. I think that we have to take a hard look at that. And so basically, and you know, just to summarize with your question regarding the 2016 fiscal reform, well, a bunch of things have to fall in line. If they do, we're okay. If they don't, we'll be having this conversation again in the next 2 quarters, I'm sure.
Your final question was on Central America. Central America has been running at around a 15% ROE. Central America is a quite different story than Colombia. Even though we have also seen some delinquency picking up there, there has been a number of positives also happening. Our operation particularly has been very keen on improving efficiency, so part of what has been able to allow them to compensate the negative that they've seen on provision expenses has been a much tighter cost platform. They also have a faster pace of growth than what we are seeing. And in general, there's a number of items and different lines of the P&L that have compensated for what has happened. To try to wrap it to your question, we expect Central America to continue performing well. There's a couple countries as always that we're putting some attention on. You saw some volatility of El Salvador earlier this year. That is something that has been there and should remain in time. We've seen some discussions in Costa Rica also about fiscal deficit that have been there. We are watchful of what the implications of fiscal deficit looks like. And then Panama might be running at a lower growth rate. However, it's a country that continues to be quite healthy. All in all, we have to deal with these differences amongst countries, but we continue seeing the region and particularly our operation in the region to be able to sustain this kind of ROE.
Our next question comes from Jason Mola from Scotiabank.
Hello, everyone. My question is related to kind of the run rate of profitability, return on equity. Clearly, the 12.5% to 13% that you're talking about for this year reflects this very high cost of risk partially related to Electrocaribe, as well as the not-so-positive environment for the earnings related to Corfe Colombiana. So if we kind of maybe start with Electrocaribe, if as I understand your statements, that a third of the provisions the increase in provisions in this quarter were related to increasing provisions related to this exposure. So is that if provisions increased over 300 billions of Colombian pesos quarter on quarter, is that is basically a third of that or 100 related? If we wanted to try and isolate the ROE excluding that, would that be the right calculation? And secondly, maybe just normalizing, adding on to that, just thinking about, you know, this doesn't seem like a normalized situation for Corfe Colombiana at all and the infrastructure side of things. Where should we think about the return on equity kind of excluding, and there's always something happens, right? But just kind of in a more normalized or long-term perspective, how do you think about profitability for Grupo Aval?
That's a great question. It's one question that we ask ourselves every day. Let me try to answer, because you hit exactly on the right points. On the one hand, much of the profitability of Aval and just about every profitable company in Colombia comes from the tax rate. If you want to know a run rate with the full 2016 fiscal reform in place, with Corfe Colombiana back to normal levels, with the country growing at 3.5%, and with the these specific credit problems behind us, I think our run rate should be 16%. I think our ROE, the ROE that we aspire to, is 16%, and I think we have the elements to get there. However, there's a lot of ifs. If you heard me correctly, there's a lot of ifs. Electricaribe will be put behind us eventually next year. I mean, one way or another, we get the problem solved, or we fully provision the exposure. Infrastructure, as I said, has to get going. But I've also said that if the financial system is not willing or able to finance infrastructure and the 4G government program, we have an obligation, which we will comply with, to get the four 4G concessions that were awarded to Corfe Colombiana going. And right now we have the legal lending limits, and we have the willingness, because we see the huge benefits for Corfe Colombiana and the group, to finance ourselves our own programs. And we will get that going, and that will replace, as you mentioned, and exceed the decreasing profitability at the Corfe Colombiana level that has come regarding infrastructure on two fronts. On the one hand, because it lost the Concesionaria Ruta del Sol concession, which obviously did away with the profits that it was receiving from that, and secondly, because some of its own concessions, old concessions, are dwindling down, like the Bogota Villavicencio, the original concession, and others. So that's another if. We will get that going, and we will get Corfe Colombiana back to its adequate levels. We will get this problem with Electricaribe behind us, and the economy will rebound. And with all that in mind, I think that, again, that's our aspiration, and we see a way to get to it. I don't know, Diego, if you have any.
I think those are the points, and actually, if the full tax reform would have been in place this year, would have been running with an ROE that should be in excess of 100 basis points above the kind of numbers that we're looking into. So that gives you a starting base that adds to the different actions and the things that should happen that Ms. Carlos pointed out.
Our next question comes from Cristina Manotas from Davivienda.
Good morning. I just have one question. I would like to know what explained the annual growth of 85% on Corfe Colombiana's gross loan, and which type of
Corfe Colombiana, when you look at Corfe Colombiana, and I want to make sure that I understand your question, Corfe Colombiana does consolidate some loans that are
financial and others that are non-financial. The side that is financial comes from a small leasing company that they have in their belly, and the most relevant piece is the non-financial side that comes from Promigas. Promigas, as we have mentioned in our past calls, has some contracts with some of their customers that are accounted for under IFRS as leasing contracts. Particularly, there's something called the SPEC, S-P-E-T, that is a floating unit of gas in the Colombian coast that has contracts that generate this kind of accounting. So what you're seeing is particularly growth in that side of the business.
Our final question comes from Germán Cristanoche from Davivienda.
Good morning. Thank you for the call and the presentation. I would like to know more about the digitalization strategy, and I don't know if you could give us some details, maybe some about the impact on profitability ratios, what do you expect on the efficiency ratio, how will be the delivery of this strategy, and also do you expect branches closing, reduction of labor force, in general terms, all the digitalization strategy, please. Thank you.
It's a great strategy, I'll tell you that. We've been working very close with our consultants to put together. It's a multifaceted strategy, as you can imagine, with so many banks. And also, as you can imagine, as we put together our digital strategies, we need to make sure that we are not executing many double efforts, so that when one of our banks gets a digital strategy in anything, like in a new product or in collection processes or et cetera, and in anything that you can imagine, we got to make sure that we use that to apply in the other banks and not to do it again, as that wouldn't be cost effective. Obviously, as with all digital strategies, the main fronts are achieving a better customer experience, and that is done through streamlining processes with customers to, for example, open accounts. And I'll give you an idea. We now have a new product that we launched some weeks ago and through Banco de Bogotá, where our clients can now open their accounts in 5 minutes or less through an iPad sort of environment. And that is turning out to be very good. We've also done some streamlining in collections, as I said. It's too early to tell you exactly what goals we have, because we are revising them every day ourselves. But we have very ambitious goals. And obviously, we're also very ambitious as to how much our investment will be, but we're revising that as well. And then finally, yeah, we have seen some efficiencies. We have seen already opportunity of some personnel reduction, which we already put in place, first phase in Banco de Bogotá, and we were able to liberate some resources there, and obviously we'll see the results of that starting next year once we've amortized the cost of the layoffs. We'll give more details in the near future, and then I'm sure you'll see in the through your own bank intelligence all that we're doing, and hopefully we'll be as successful as I think we can be. But we'll talk more about it as we move on and as we get things accomplished.
Our next question comes from Natalia Corfield from J.P. Morgan.
Good morning, all. Thank you for taking my question. It's actually with regards to Ruta del Sol. I probably didn't get everything that was said today in the call, but I understand that the first payment of the 50-60% of the total loans It's probably going to come soon because the suppliers and employees, they are reaching the threshold of 70%, and then the banks will be able to get their portion. Nevertheless, you mentioned that there was a problem with regards with the decision of the tribunal, and there's going to be a hearing on September 1st. So I'm trying to understand if this can delay the payment of the 50-60% of the loan that that you're expecting to receive, and also if you have, like, what happens to the 40%, if you have any idea of when the remaining portion could be received by the banks. Thank you.
Okay, let me see if I understood that. There are basically two questions. Number one is how we're doing on the 70% of employees and suppliers, and whether if we get those done, the first payment will be made. This is one question that I understood. And then secondly, what should happen going forth in arbitration, and how that what repercussions should that have on the remaining payments, right? Much more or less what I understood. Okay. On the 70 percentages, as I said, number one, employees are done. Suppliers were very close. We're only about $2 million away from getting it done. It's a very, very painstaking process because the concessionaire, CRDS, has to produce the bills, which then are analyzed by an expert hired by the ANI, which then the expert's conclusions are analyzed by the ANI. Then the ANI takes they've taken an average 43 days per bill. We've brought it down to about 30 days, and then they give their authorization to the fiduciaria who finally authorizes the payments. But so we're finally sort of close to getting it done. Now, your question specifically is, because of what happened in arbitration, where the ANI did not comply with their obligation to present the termination agreement as a settlement between the parts, should that affect the first payment? And the answer is categorically no, it should not affect it. The first payment is not affected by it because the agreement is in place, it's signed, and so it's a commitment, and the agreement specifically says that with the 270 percentages, the first payment will be made. What had to be ratified specifically by the arbitration tribunal is the full value of liquidation formula. And basically that says we have to agree on what the total liquidation value is going to be, but there is no doubt in anybody's mind, and that is why the first payment will be made, that the full liquidation value will amply exceed the first payment. Therefore, the first payment will be made as soon as we get that over and done with. With regards to the remaining payments, basically, as we said, the banks are owed about $800 million. They'll get, say, you know, call it $500 million in this first payment. They'll still be owed about $300 million, and that has to be paid. Then what we had agreed to was that the banks would be paid between now and 2000 and the year 2021, and that's what it's in the agreement. And that was supposed to be ratified by arbitration and by the tribunal. When the ANI didn't show up and did not present the agreement as settlement, then what is happening is that the arbitration tribunal is saying, okay, then we'll go ahead and proceed with our own competence to decide on how the agreement has to be looked. And one of the things that they're going to decide is whether they like the agreement that we had signed. And they might still ratify it, not as settlement, but as a pronunciation of the tribunal. So we hope that, and the problem with that is not necessarily that, that we'll have to run the whole process. That's okay. We are very confident that the agreement is good enough. We're confident that the liquidation formula is good enough because it is the liquidation formula that was included in the contract, the concession contract, to start with. So we're confident that, that these arbitrators from the tribunal, from the arbitration tribunal, will eventually ratify the agreement. Once they do, we'll be 100% confident that the banks will be paid in full. But then it's got to run its course, and unfortunately, this can take, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 months. Whether if we had done it in settlement, it would have been just one sitting with the judges, and we would have been done. Now we got to wait for it to run its course. But as I said, we have pretty solid background to make sure that and reasoning to make sure that what's in the agreement will eventually prevail and it will be finally approved. To summarize, we are very confident that the banks will be paid in full. We're very confident that they will be paid in the next, that the first payment will be received shortly, and that the remaining payments will be received in the next 3 years. And we just got to let it run its course through the tribunal now.
We have no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the call back to Mr. Luis Carlos Sarmiento.
All right, I think that wraps it up, Sylvia. Thank you very much, and thank you all for listening in. And as always, we remain at your service. Should you have any additional questions that we can share with you, the responses, and then we will see each other in the next quarter for our next quarter call. And thanks again.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.